today is really Sif Dalet, but we have to do Sif Gimel first because that's the way it works. Sif Gimel comes before Sif Dalet. So Sif Gimel is the end of the way I would break down Sif Misadi Aleph is Aleph through Gimel is sort of one Indian, is when you have two things that are not hot, that touch each other, and what the concerns are with that. And then Sif Dalet is almost its own Simin, which is Tasal Gavar Rila Gavar, and that's as far as we can get today. But let's first just discuss very briefly Sif Gimel. So Shulchan Aruch writes over here, Tzarech Lizar Shlo Yiga Basar Belechen, Shemigavo Asalo Ochlo Im Gvina. That you have to be careful that no meat touches your bread, because if meat touches your bread, you're not going to be allowed to eat that meat together with gavina. So the Achronim already are bothered by a kasha. You're not allowed to eat it with gavina. If meat touches your bread and your bread becomes fleshy, you should not be allowed to eat your bread, period. It should become treif, because there's a halacha in Siman Sadi Zayin that we're going to learn that you're not allowed to have milchik bread or fleshy bread. So if your bread touched meat or touched cheese, it's become milchik, it's become fleshik, and should be asur to eat mikol v'kol. It should be absolutely asur to eat. Forget about the fact that you're going to come to eat it with the other min. So the pashup shines that it's not a kasha, it's a klutz kasha. Because the halacha in Siman Sadi Zayin is... Let's have a shulchan in front of me, might as well read it. The halacha in Siman Sadi Zayin is that... ein lashin isa b'chalav shana yavolach l'mbasa. Now you're not allowed to do the lisha of the dough together with milk or flesh, and because you might come to eat such a bread with the other min, meaning that it's a din in the lisha. But once you already have bread, so of course you're allowed to put something. You're allowed to make a sandwich, a pastrami sandwich. You're allowed to make cream cheese on a bagel, right? You're just not allowed to put pastrami and cream cheese in the bagel. But you're allowed to have milchig on already made bread. So that's not really the issue over here. So that's why it's a bit of a klutz kasha. The halacha is that you just have to be careful not to touch basar to the lechem, because you might come to eat it with gvina, and that's going to be the problem. This is based on your Yerushalmi in the sixth parak of Pesachim, which the Yerushalmi says to take the crumbs from a fleshy table before you eat milachim. So the Shach adds that assumes that the meat or cheese that's touching the bread is lach. And the concern is that you'll forget to do a hadacha. Primo Gatim just points out in the Shach that the Mashmas is that hadacha doesn't work on bread. So probably even without concern that you might forget to do a hadacha, what's going to do if you try to rinse off? What's going to happen if you try to rinse off bread? You'll end up with soggy mush. You can't really rinse off bread so easily. So it could just be that hadacha is not even shayich on bread, and that's why it's not only a concern that you're not going to do that you're going to forget to do hadacha. It's just that hadacha is not shayich. Just give me a second. Prima Kadim is bothered by the entire halacha over here, because the halacha suggests like a double concern. First of all, shema yochal alechem imagvina, that you might come to eat the lechem together with gvina, and that you might forget to do the adacha, that you might forget to be madiach. So where do we ever find a double chashash like that? The Yerushalmi doesn't go that far. The Yerushalmi only says that the crumbs that are already fleshig need to be removed from the table. The Yerushalmi doesn't say, don't touch the crumbs to fleshig, because you might come to eat them with milchim and you'll forget to do adacha. The Yerushalmi just says, if the crumbs are fleshig, take them off the table. But if we assume, like those poskim against the Shach, that hadacha doesn't work on bread, so then it makes a lot more sense. Then it's not really a double concern. It's not that you're going to forget to do hadacha. So you can't do hadacha. Hadacha is not shayich for bread. If you assume, like the Shach, that hadacha is shayich for bread, so the Prima Gadol points out in the Sif Seidas over here that it's a very shvera halach over here. It's a very far-fetched concern that we don't really have we have a lot of far-fetched concerns in Basar B'Chalav, but this is a far-fetched concern that we don't have a source for, right? It doesn't seem that it's based on any makar. So that's what the Prima Gadol means. This is a raya that l'chora hadacha does not work on bread, and that's why this is legitimate a legitimate concern. Now, where does this ever come up? Where does this ever come up? So I think probably the case that is most common is you go shopping and you buy, in Israel, let's say, more so than in America. Because in America, you buy a loaf of bread and it's totally wrapped in plastic. But a lot of times, or if you go buy fresh bread, sometimes in the bakery, when you buy a fresh loaf of bread or challah and it's hot right out of the oven, they don't want to put it in plastic yet because they don't want you ingesting plastic. The plastic would melt all over the bread. So they'll put it open in like a paper bag. They don't want to close the bag because then all the moisture stays inside. So they sort of like keep the bag open so that the steam can escape. And it's open in a bag. So now you're going shopping and you take this open paper bag and a carton of milk and you put it in your same shopping bag. And a lot of times the cartons of milk either schwitz a little, which wouldn't be such a problem, because that's probably just water, the condensation. But a lot of times, milk is packed tightly together, and one of the cartons has a leak, and all of the cartons are a little bit wet with milk on the outside. So that's what some of the posts would say, that maybe you should be careful to put your milk and your bread in a different shopping bag because of this halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Now you could argue, we don't have a halacha that you're not allowed to put them in the same shopping bag lest they touch. It's just that you're not allowed to touch them. But maybe the lashon tzarich li zaher shelo yigav basar b'lechem means they have to take reasonable. You have to make a reasonable effort to make sure that you don't risk it happening, that you don't risk the basar touching the lechem that you plan on then having with a milchig meal, or risk having milk touch the lechem that you plan on then having with a fleishig meal. So that's what some of the poskim say, that maybe it's a good idea. I think in Noel Aryeh he quotes someone that says maybe it's a good idea when you go shopping, if it's an open paper bag of bread and you're putting milk in the same shopping bag, that's maybe not such a good idea. Maybe it's a good idea to put them in separate shopping bags. Some of them from supermarkets, when you go, like the people, the bag people are trained to like put the milk in separately, to wrap up the milk in like its own little thing, so that nothing spills one to the other. Maker at din, it's probably mutter, because most of the time the milk is not leaking, and most of the time the bread is not open, and most of the, so maker at din, it's not such a concern, but okay, possibility.
Is this case about adacha different? Because in the other cases, if you just eat without adacha, it'd be a problem. But here, just eating like bread with meat in it, and then eating with adacha is not a problem, and putting it with cheese would be the problem. What's the double problem?
That you might forget to do adacha, and even if you forget to do adacha, and if you forget to do adacha, you then might eat it with cheese. Right?
What's the difference between this and the case from yesterday?
What do you mean? Why?
Yeah, yesterday there was no double problem.
Yesterday it was the meat and the cheese touching each other. Right? So there was already a connection between the two. Over here it's a secondary concern that you might then come to bring to have with the cheese. You mean, remind me, what we were talking about this morning, that guys were Mavar with Rav Schechter. This morning we spoke yesterday about the just to close off the first three sifrim, we spoke yesterday about the shach's bikula, that you're allowed to use trefa kalim for kol arai but not kavua. So we were struggling a little bit with how do we define arai. So what I said yesterday in the name of Rav Schechter was that if you're going to a hotel and you go to the continental breakfast and every day they give you a new bowl, or it's probably not the same bowl you used yesterday, so then even if you're there for several days, that could still be called arai because you're not using that same bowl more than once. But if you go to an Airbnb and you're using the same set of utensils over and over again, that might be called more kavua and not arai. So after several conversations that several guys had with Rav Schechter, what emerged was that if left to his own svara, he would have thought that, or he was convinced to think that it's not really a din in the kli kavua and arai. It's a din in the gavra. Like how many times, if you're going to be staying in a hotel and constantly be using trefa kalim day in and day out, even if it's a different trefa kli, that might be called kavua. That may not be called arai. But then someone showed him a Chachmas Adam, where the Chachmas Adam says that no, kavua means that it's in your house and you plan on keeping it indefinitely as a kli that you can use for kol. that if you have a trefa kli that you decide, you know what, I'm always going to use this for cold as a fruit bowl or something like that, that's kavua. But anything short of that is arai, which would mean that even in the Airbnb, it would be considered arai, because you don't have the right to be koveya anything for anything when you're in the Airbnb. You're only there for a few days. So you say, okay, the Chachmas Adam is the Gadol HaPoskim Bashkenaz. We always rely on Chachmas Adam for Psak Halacha. So if you want to rely on the Chachmas Adam, you have what to rely on with the Chachmas Adam. Okay, so that just puts a bow on yesterday. So now let's get into, see if valid. Oh, Jonathan, you have a question?
We said the two questions. We said that hadacha wasn't really relevant for bread. What if it has a hard klipa like a sourdough or a baguette?
Right. So I was thinking about that. That might be the case. Meaning. What's the shachin answer to the taina that you can't do hadacha on bread? So there are breads that you can do hadacha. I mean, sourdough breads are very. You ever tried to cut one? I can't stand it. For lacha mishnah, it's like the worst, right? It's just you can't get through it. So you could probably do hadacha pretty easily on one of these sourdoughs. Okay.
And then my second caution. So Rabbi said at the very beginning of shir that if milchit touches one part of the bread and flishes touches the other part of the bread, the floor should be trafe. Let's say it's like a full size baguette, and for whatever reason there
was no. I wasn't saying that it should be trafe, because I was saying that in Siman Tzadi Zayin it says that milchit bread by definition is trafe. I mean, we'll get to that when we get there, but it's there's a halacha that's the famous Thomas's English muffins shayla, that how they could be OUD. So okay, but let's hold off on that.
No, I wasn't saying about that. I was saying about that if meat and dairy touch the same bread, the bread should be trafe.
Not dafka. I mean, a little bit touches cold on one end, and a little bit touches cold on the other end. It's cut in half. Now. Ilah gavar tesad gavar. So the Gemara in Pesachim Ayinheim Beizayim Vavav Amud Aleph teaches us the following: Itmar Cham leTocham Divrei Hakol Asur. That if you have two hot things, treif and kosher, and they mix together, everyone holds that the treif asur is the kosher. Tzonin leTok Tzonin Divrei Hakol Mutter. If you have Tzonin leTok Tzonin, so there are no blios that pass from two cold items from one to the other, and therefore it can be Mutter. But what if you have something hot that lands into something cold, or something cold lands onto something hot? So then it's machlokes. Rav amar ila agavar, Shmuel amar tasa agavar. The Rav says that the upper one is the dominant one, and Shmuel says the bottom one is the dominant one. So if the bottom one is hot, then we assume, according to Shmuel, that there's a transference of tam, whereas if the top one is hot, then Rav is going to say there's a transference of tam. But in the reverse, each one is going to say that in the other one's case, tam does not transfer. So if hot milk and hot meat mix, both are asur. But a machlokas, if cold meat falls on hot milk, or cold kosher meat falls on hot pork, for that matter, or hot nevela, so the shaila in the Gemara is, do we assume that the heat from the bottom one overwhelms the top one, and therefore tam goes? Or do we assume that no, the heat from the top one would overwhelm the bottom one, but heat from the bottom one would not overwhelm the top one? So it's Machlokes Rav and Shmuel, and we know that the general klal in Pesach is that Hilchos HaKirav be Isurim, Hilchos HaShmuel b'dine. We pass like Shmuel in Dine Mamnus, we pass like Rav in Issur V'Hetter. Rav Shapta always says over, we pass like Rav in Issur V'Hetter because Rav is a greater expert in Issur V'Hetter. We pass like Shmuel in Dine Mamnus because Shmuel is a greater expert in Dine Mamnus. That's not just something Rav Shapta likes to say over, it's a rush. The rush says that way, that's why we pass that way. It's not just like we decided to, like, let's see, who should we always pass in, like, so we'll try to be fair. So we'll pass. Obviously, there's Svarta to it, we pass what we think is more MS. So the one who's a greater expert is the one that we paskin more like. I ran into Rav Hirsch on the way into the building today, and he said, "Ooh, what are you learning today?" So I said, "Tassal Gavri." He said, "Ooh, psach my involved." So it's tough sugya. So I said, "Yeah," and he said, "I always tell my Talmidim, I wish I was as great an expert in Dina Mamnus as Rav was, and as bad as Shmuel was. Still wouldn't be so bad." True. Point taken. But Rav was a greater expert in this. Shmuel was a greater expert in Dine Mamnus. It wouldn't be so bad if we were like Rav or Shmuel in anything. But that's So even though normally you would think this is, I mean, we're mamish, the name of the course on the course catalog is Isser Vaheter, right? So you would think this is Hilchasa Karav Yisuri, but we pass like Shmuel over here. We pass like Shmuel, even though it's Isser Vaheter. And that's what Rashi explains. Rashi writes, we have two brises that support Shmuel and none that support Rav, and therefore it's an indication that the Gemara is giving us that we support Shmuel. It's interesting, there's a whole discussion in the Rishonim why I needed both brises, right? What didn't I learn from the first brisa that I needed the second brisa? It could be that the Gemara wanted to present both brises to show the overwhelming support for Shmuel to override the general klal and halacha, that it's a karav v'yisuri. So I don't know that you need to make a tzrichasa between the prices. That could be that's why we need both prices. The Beis Yosef quotes and Beis Yosef writes that everyone holds that way. It's not just Rashi. Everyone holds like Shmuel over here. So Tasal Gavar, and therefore, if you have something cold that lands on something hot, there's transference of time, and the hot thing impacts the cold thing. The cold thing does not impact the hot thing. But if you have something hot land on something cold, there's no transference of time, and therefore they don't affect each other. Not whatsoever. They don't affect each other. Now the Beis Yosef quotes a Ran that Plutai the Rabbi Shmuel b'shenatlo min ha'or el shadai nuchan. Meaning, the Ran makes a pashal of ha'ara. If I have cold milk that falls onto a hot piece of meat on the grill, right? So then, of course, that's going to trade up everything. I mean, you don't say that Rav is going to say, oh, well, the law of Gavar, so the cold milk cooled off. That no, when it's on the fire, everything's considered hot. When everything's on the fire, there's nothing to talk about. The whole position of Rav, that he law gavar, is only when it's not no longer on the fire. So Beis Yosef quotes a machlokas, whether it's sonin the tochan is asur bekulo, or just a kedei netila. So both the Rashi and Torah Sabayis and the Rambam say that it makes the entire thing asur, and that's how we pass it. That if sonin lands in tochan, tasal gavar means that the whole thing is asur, that it trapes up the entire piece that falls on top. So you have a cold piece of cheese that lands on top of a hot burger. So the halacha is that the entire piece of cheese and the entire burger become asr. It's asr bekulo. So the fundamental kasha that the achronim struggle with over here is a kasha in lamdus more than it is a kasha in halacha. But they're just bothered by a struggle to even call it lamdus. It's just like a technical kasha, more than a kasha in halacha. But they're bothered by, the Prima Gadim raises this issue, that it seems to be machlokas and metzias. And we know we're not supposed to have machlokas and metzias. What kind of lamdin has a machlokas and metzias? So meaning especially if the metzias could be tested. So if you're not sure, does time transfer when the bottom thing is hot and the top thing is cold? Or does time transfer when the bottom thing is cold and the top thing is hot? And machlokas and metzias won't test it. And, you know, how do you test it? Says the Prima Gadim, get a kefela. In the times of the Gemara, they used to always have a kefela. They used to always rely on a non-Jewish person who could taste things. So you have a hot burger and a cold piece of cheese falls on it. Have a non-Jew taste the cheese and let him see if he can taste. If he can detect the taste of meat and that cheese or not. And then you'll know that it's tasal gavar if he can. And you'll know that it's ilah gavar if he can't. Why don't we just test it? L'chora, you don't even need a kefela. You don't even need a non-Jew to test it. You can get a Jew to test it. Just don't use meat and cheese. Use meat and potato kugel. Meaning it doesn't matter what the two foods are, right? Take a cold piece of potato kugel, drop it on a hot piece of meat, and then taste it yourself, right? See if you could taste the meat in the potato kugel or the potato kugel in the meat. So it's something that could be tested. It seems to be a machlokas in Metzius. So the Prima Gadim gives his own answer. In Mishpat Zav, Sivkat and Zayin, a little bit difficult to understand, right? So the Didi Yesh Lomar, Demilo Mishkachas Kizayis Basu Liyoru Gdola Shal Chalav Vafilu Achi Ein Botam Chalav Dela Vadai Sheivla. He says, do bliyos always happen? Is it like a guarantee that every time something hot touches something cold, that there's going to be a bliya? Even two hot things. Is there always a guarantee that there's a bliya that automatically always goes? And he says, not always. V'rav shmo pliki, mar samar ala rov nosin tam vada yechad di kekfeilu sagi al di kekfeilu filu be kli rishon ala yechad di kekfeilu asum yisafik lemari lo lemar tasala. He says, a kefela would work, but it's too complicated to test, because half the time you do the test, you're not going to taste anything anyway, since blios aren't always detectable anyhow. So we're always machmir that there are blios, but it's not in Torah's vaday that we're machmir that there are blios. Well, we're choshesh that there are bleos. So what are you going to do? You're going to take your cold potato kugel, put it on a hot piece of chicken. Then you're going to taste the cold potato kugel and see if it was bleo from the chicken. And you don't taste any chicken in it. So maybe you just had a situation where there were no bleos. Because half the time there are no bleos anyway. But maybe had there been bleos, it would have gone in that direction and then in the other direction. I don't know. So do it 10 times. I mean, like, it's such a... First of all, the assumption that there aren't bleos, that itself is a chiddush. That half the time there aren't going to be bleos is a chiddush in its own right. But even so, when just make sure that the bleos are going in the right direction. Unless what he's saying is that bleos can go in either direction, technically. It could go from the top to the bottom or from the bottom to the top, and they're arguing what usually happens. Which one are we choshesh for? And therefore, if you taste the top of the chicken on that cold piece of potato kugel, it could be that you're the lucky winner. You got the one in a million where the top went in the opposite direction of what it normally does. So you're not going to be able to tell. That's a little hard for me to... This is more Lamdusha Teretz, that the Tzvila Tzadik on the page of the Shulchan Aruch in the Yeltsin Mepharshim will be here, the Tzvila Tzadik gives. He starts off by saying, you know, a little bit of backdrop, so see if you can follow along on this one. There's a kasha that the Balei HaTosos ask that as follows. When something becomes asur b'kedei klipa, why not say that, let's say the meat becomes asur b'kedei klipa, right? Meaning, so you have a hot piece of meat that landed on a cold piece of cheese, right? So the meat becomes asur b'kedei klipa. So why is it asur b'kedei klipa? Because cheese went into a kedei klipa of the meat, right? So you have basar b'chalav and that kedei klipa. Well, don't we say chaticha nas nevela? Now that part of it is part of that hot meat is basar b'chalav. That kedei klipa should go to the next kedei klipa, which should go to the next kedei klipa, which should go to the next kedei klipa. Why do we say that it only went into a kedei klipa into the meat, but the meat becomes asur, the entire rest of the meat should be asur also because chaticha nas nevela. So Tosfos, I think in Chulin, asked this kasha, and he says that Eina Nesu Yachol Esor B'Makom Sheini Isu Yachol Elechimo, right? That something cannot answer something else if it can't travel that far. Meaning, yeah, there's a principle of Chaticha Nas Nevela, but when an item can't travel through the entire length of the other food, then it can't asur the entire length of the other food. It can only asur as far as it could travel. The gvina can't prohibit more than it could travel. So if you say tasar gavar, so now says the Tzvila Tzadik, if you accept that premise of Tosfos, that really, strictly speaking, we should have said that the whole thing becomes asur. But why does it remain at a kidei klipa? Because enanes ayachol asur beyond where it's able to travel. So he says, if you say tasa gavar, a mashu of the isser will actually penetrate the entire chaticha. Meaning, in both directions, you might not taste it beyond the kedei klipa. But the difference between tasa gavar and ilal gavar, meaning, is if you have something hot on the bottom, something cold lands on top, right? So tasa gavar. So what happens physically? Like, what actually happens? How far do the bleos go? So says the Tzvila Tzadik, in the first kedei klipa, the bleos are detectable. Beyond the kedei klipa, throughout the whole thing, the bleos are there but undetectable. They're there but undetectable. If you say ilah gavar, they only go as far as the first kedei klipa. They don't go anywhere beyond the first kedei klipa, and that's why it stops at the kedei klipa. Following? Meaning, according to Tosfos, why do we stop at the kedei klipa and not say that just the whole thing becomes asur? Because if it doesn't, it's not going to asur more than it can penetrate. It's not going to asur more than it can penetrate. But if you have a situation where it's able to penetrate the whole thing, but just in a mashu, the first kedei klipa penetrates fully, and then beyond that it penetrates, but just in a mashu, you're not going to taste it in the rest of it, but then you're going to be able to say, chaticha nas nevela, and the whole thing becomes aser. He says, that's the lumdus of tasal gavar. The way tasal gavar works is that the kedei klipa gets mamish, a full tam, and the whole rest of it gets a mashu of tam. Mashu of tam is not detectable by a kvela, but it's enough to say that chaticha nas nevela, that kedei klipa asas next kedei klipa, which asas next kedei klipa, and it asas the entire thing, it will make a chaticha nas nevela. But if it's a case of something hot that landed on something cold, then the metzias is that it only goes kedei klipa entirely. Nothing travels beyond the kedei klipa. Oh, nothing's traveling beyond the kedei klipa, then it will only aser kedei klipa. But again, a kfeila is not going to be able to help you because physically, in terms of tasting past that first kedei klipa, you're not going to taste anything anyway. It's just a matter of whether the metzias is that a mashu who went to that point to then trigger the ability of chatich nasavela to take effect.
Why would that be the case that one direction penetrates more and the other direction penetrates less?
Well, that's a whole discussion of Tassal Gavari Lata.
No, but physically, like in Metzius.
Yeah. Oh, so we'll discuss why it is that we hold Tassal Gavari, right? There are two possibilities. Either it's weight, that the weight of the thing, of the top thing, the gravity of it pressing down causes the flavor to penetrate in, or it's just based on the heat rises. So if you have something that's on the bottom, that's hot. So we assume heat rises. So the heat is heading in the... If the top thing is hot, the heat is heading in the wrong direction, right? It's heading away from the action, not toward the action.
You would say that if you say Tassal Gavari,
so if you say Tassal Gavari, then the whole thing would have to be, yeah. The whole thing would have to be, yes.
Why is it still not a Holy Spirit? It's still a Holy Spirit in terms of whether or not...
Yeah, but what's the problem with machlokes metzias? The reason we don't have machlokes metzias is because just test it. Meaning machlokes metzias is problematic because just see what the metzias is. But if it's machlokes metzias, they can't be mevarer because it's a metzias that's not detectable, so then it's not a problem with machlokes metzias. When I was in Rav Simon's shiur, my early mission shiur, he used to always tell us that he heard from Rabbi Willig in the name of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, in the name of the Rav, in the name of Rav Meisha, in the name of Rav Chaim, that he used to say that every time, that there's no such thing as machlokes. Every machlokes metzias should be turned into a machlokes in halacha. That when you have a machlokes, is it up or is it down? It's a little bit up and a little bit down. The question is that halachically considered up or is that halachically considered down? Right? Meaning, like, you could always reformulate it as a machlokes in halacha. But over here, like, it's okay for it to be a machlokes in metzias as long as it's metzias that's not detectable. That's a few tzaddik's chav. Yeah.
Answer my question today. Why
I had an experience with Rabbi Bleich today. Yeah, I'll tell you after.
I asked why in certain cases we would rely on a boy tasting certain foods. But so I asked him about stainless steel and I asked him about salt, and so we'll leave that for another time. He was so happy with me. But I said, why don't we rely on the metzias for the fact that you know, people have tested it and in certain cases they saw the stainless steel as a bolei hatam. At least rely on a goy. So he said, and it's this big thing, I think, like the Shita in general, he said the reason we rely on the goyim to taste is because that's where halakha granted us the permission to have goyim determine the halakha for us. But in other contexts, it doesn't matter what the metzias is. The gather of halakha just doesn't permit us to be based
sounds
on
like the other life type.
Right? It's metaphysics or metachemistry, not metaphysics.
Right. As Rav Shaftu, you wouldn't say the same thing. But, I mean, many things. Today, I got a phone call from... I got a text from the 732 area code. What 732? Edison.
Central Jersey.
And Lakewood, I think, right? Isn't Lakewood also 732?
4908.
What?
4908.
4908, okay. So I got a text from 732. I have a very important shayla. I need to speak to Rabbi Bleich right now. My Rav told me that I can text you and you'll get me to Rabbi Bleich. It said that I asked Rav David Cohn. Rav David Cohn said that the only person I can ask is Rabbi Bleich. That I should just call Rabbi Bleich. He won't answer the question. And my Rav told me that if I reach out to you, you'll get me to Rabbi Bleich. It was like lunchtime, so I went two doors down, you know, on the sixth floor on Gluck, see if he's in his office. Sure enough, he's in his office. So I called the guy back, and I put it on the speaker at first, which in retrospect probably wasn't right to do, but because our Gluck didn't know how to take it off the speaker, so he's holding it like this. But I put it on speaker, and the guy said, "All right, Gluck, from Dumb Cone said I have to ask you and only you. Is my wife allowed to take a morning after pill?" So Rabbi Bleich said, "Is there any health reason for it?" He said, "No." the guy said, I can't be matir. And the guy said, okay, thank you. And that was it. That was all the conversation. I'm like, a little more detail? I would have thought, like, that has to be a longer conversation, no? Like, well, why does she want a morning after? But, you know, like, I don't know. But anyway, that was, yes, that was interesting. So once I was there, I was asking him what he thought about boys coming home from Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. Let's just say Rav Taragin should not recruit him to speak. the chizuk, to stay. Yeah. So he had strong opinions. Okay. So that's the Tzvil Tzadik says. All the Achronim get in on the action of trying to give the Tariq this Kasha. The Aruch HaShulchan has a couple of attempts over here. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that Kol Ne'amonis HaKfeila Hu Davri K'shish B'vada Yisru L'fi Kabbalas Chachamim V'HaKfeila Toim M'var L'Aluim Nasan Yisru Tam B'Hed. Says the way K'fela works is that you know that there's an Isser, you just don't know if it's detectable Isser. But you're not going to believe a kfeila to say that there's Isser when you don't know that the Isser even exists. He says, similar to a kli shlishi. Meaning, if we have a kabbalah in halacha that tasa'a gavar, then it's not going to help that a kfeila is going to say, ilah gavar, I see that that when the hot thing was on top, that it penetrated the whole bottom thing. No, it's Machlokes Rabbi Shmuel what the Kabbalah and Halacha is. And therefore, the Kfela doesn't have the rights to override, I guess it's somewhat similar to Rabbi Shmuel, doesn't have the rights to override what were Makabal the Halacha to be. Meaning, and he compares it to a Kli Shlishi. We assume that in a Kli Shlishi, things can't be Balea and Maflut, that you can't transfer Tam in a Kli Shlishi. What if you have a Kfela that comes along and says, I can taste it, I can taste that this, that there's Bleos of whatever, something was once cooked in a pot that was then poured into another pot that was then poured into the, that was then poured onto this plate. I can taste, it doesn't matter that he can taste it. He can't taste it. We assume that it doesn't, it's Lomal of Lomarit. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, that's the Vard over here, that we assume it's a given that there's a Mesorah. It's just a Machlokes what that Mesorah was, whether it's Yilal Gavar, it's Sal Gavar, and the Kfela doesn't have the right to override the Mesorah. Now the Yehuda in Madura Kamasim Chavches has another Mahalich. He says, by min b'mino, kfeila doesn't help. So you might say, just experiment with min b'sheino mino to see if tasal gavar or ilah gavar. He says, no, you can't know that it consistently will be the same every time. Machlokas, Rabbi Shmuel, is what will happen most of the time. Very similar to the Prima Gadim, right? That the machlokas is only really what will happen. Most of the time, it's not really a machlokas about what happens every time. So therefore, there's no real way to test it. Look, the Aruch HaShulchan, he has other, he has more lambdas, but you got to see Simon Sadiches really to understand his other tirutzim. But there are other tirutzim. But this is the kasha that like everyone's bothered about. Yeah. Ultimately, it comes to that about what happens most of the time. So you'd have to do a long range study. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan asks Vaitu, he says, imagine a huge vat of boiling hot milk falls on top of a teeny tiny piece of cheese. You're going to tell me this tasal gavar and the tiny little cold piece of cheese overpowers the hot milk that's coming down on it. That's such a shver of art. How could you say that? You're boiling hot milk and you pour it over a little tiny cold piece of meat, you will see that the milk is still boiling hot after you pour it. Right? It didn't cool down. Not only that, you'll find that little tiny piece of meat got very hot. If you have a four or five to one ratio, one to the other, it doesn't matter what's tasa, what's ilah in mitzvahs. And if there is some sort of shear where we stop saying Tosagavari Lagavar, we just say, okay, look, Mitzias is that you know, one overwhelms the other because it's just the Kamus overrides the Tosagavari La'a. So how come Chazal never gave us such a shear? It's a strong kasha. Right? They just say that, oh, bottom and top. Bottom and top. The bottom might be 1 ounce, the top might be 100 ounces. How do you say bottom and top? So he writes, V'yirli barur, d'mayri sheshavin hein bahakamus. The assumption of the whole sugi of the Tosagavari Lagavar is that they're equal in kamus. Ulufi erech hachalav kenu gam kamus habasar. V'lchei nechluku chazal ha'echus shel mi gover. He'el yaro ha'tachton. Which one is more dominant when they're the same in quantity? V'vskal ilchza da'tachton gover. He says, Raya berurulazem midivre tosu shabbos men bezom ralif. The Tanya, no, sin adam chamin le tocha tzonin velo tzonin tocha chamin, that on Shabbos you could put chamin into tzonin, but not tzonin into chamin. And Rashi writes, Mishum, the tasal gavar. Why can't you put tzonin into chamin? Because that's bishul on Shabbos. And tasal gavar, you're being mevashel the tzonin. The Hikshra Tosol, so Tosol there asked, in Kaitik Shemeachal, Mandasvirile, Ilo gavar. So why isn't that a problem for the Shita that says Ilo gavar? And Tosos answers, Pirush Rabbeinu Tam, De Ein Zesh Shayach Lazeh. Meaning the Gemara and Shabbos didn't have a machlokas about it. It just says that you're not allowed to put Sonin into Chamin. Well, why not? With Yoldi Logov, or Yoldi Rav, why can't you put Sonin into Chamin? So he says, Ein Zesh Shayach El Chamin Latok Sonin, Mashma Shat Sonin, Meruba Me'achamin. Vit Sonin Latok Chamin, Mashma Shat Chamin Shalamata Merubin. When it talks in Shabbos about Sonin the Tochamin or Chamin the Tochzonin, whatever's going Latoch the other one is always less than what it's going into. That's the manner of speech. When you talk about, ooh, some milk fell into my chicken soup. It fell into means that for etzim it's chicken soup. And some milk fell into the chicken soup. Whenever you talk about something falling Litoch, the thing it fell Litoch is the dominant, and that which did the falling is a smaller amount. And therefore it's not subject to Ilah Gavar or Tzasah Gavar according to Rabbeinu Tam, because there's one that's much greater in Kamus, and when you have a greater sense of Kamus, then you don't have to get into Tzasah Gavar or Ilah Gavar. V'adrab lo pirsha shmami no deshavenein, he says, from the fact, the lo pirsha, the fact that they don't say anything about a shear of Kamus, it must be that it's only when the Kamus is the same. A little difficult though, no? Exactly the same? It's only if it's mamish precisely, you know. At some point, you're going to have to say there's got to be a shear, right? If you have one is 99 ounces falls into 98 ounces, you're going to say now forget about Tosai Law. The one that's greater kamus automatically wins. Or do you just trust the Aruch HaShulchan's intuition that a 4-to-1 ratio is enough? I don't know. Well, what's the shear exactly?
Why did they say that if it's the top one has enough here, enough kamus to order that?
Yeah, so we'll get to that also. We'll get to we'll get to that also. There's another suffix. Rabbi Kivager points out over here that there's prima gadim and simtsad nidalut that raises a suffix. He says, Dash aninis tapakti kli matchos shuvucham or mamish betokho letavshul tzonei. What if you take something, a hot metal utensil that was heated by fire, and you stick it right into something cold? Do you say Tasal Gavar and Eino Sarak Klipa? Or do you say, no, if it was heated by fire, mamish, then you're not going to say Tasal Gavar. Then it's Mafu Mavuya. I don't know if you've ever seen these things. They have these coil things that people would stick in cold drinks to heat up their drinks. Remember, my 8th grade Rebbe used to have that. It was this thing, you plugged it into the wall, and it was just like an open coil. They probably don't make it anymore because it's probably like very dangerous, right? It's just like an open coil. You just stick it into your cup of cold water, and it boils up the cup of cold water, right? So clearly, I mean, the whole point is it boils up the cup of cold water. You can say Tasal Gavar on such a thing. So that's a prima gadim's question. Now, what's the lumbus of Tasal Gavar? So there is a machlokas between the Ramah and the Marsha. If you have two items that are side by side, so there is no Ila or Tasal. Right, you have a hot item and a cold item that are next to each other. They're touching each other next to each other. So do you assume, what do you assume? Do you assume the time goes throughout the whole thing, or do you assume only Kedei Klipa? So that's Machlokes Ramah and the Marshal. The Ramah in Siman Kufhei, in Tarovis, in Siv Gimel, says that if one item is hot and the other is cold, you only need klipa. You only need klipa. We assume that we view the hot item, that's the same as the hot item being on top. Right? You only need klipa. The Shach over there in Sivkat Tess quotes a Marshal, but no, you need the whole thing becomes asir. You need to the blios go entirely from one to the other. The whole thing becomes asir, meaning that's the same as the hot one being on the bottom. So if Salvechik and Shirei Rav, Sim Samachal, those bays, explains Yesh Lach Gor Begeder Din Tassal Gavar. Right? There's a Chakira to be made over here. What exactly is the Geder of this Din of Tassal Gavar? Is it that you need both items to be warm in order to forbid the entire thing? And the principle of Tassal Gavar tells us that when the bottom one is hot, it heats up the top one, so they are both warm. Meaning, really fundamentally, in order for Blios to transfer fully, both be hot. Tassal, because heat rises, when the bottom one is hot, they both become hot, and therefore you have full transfer of top. That's one way to learn the lumdus of Tassal Gavar. Or is it that no? You only need the Isser to be hot. You only need the one that's being polite to be hot. And as long as the hot Isser is on the bottom, it won't be cooled down by the Heter Tzonin on that one. Meaning that as long as one thing stays hot and doesn't get cooled down, and it's able to stay hot, it will still have the impact even if the other thing isn't hot. Right? That's the other way to understand Tassal Gavar. That Tassal Gavar means that the Tassal is not affected by the Ila'ah. It's not affected by the cold cheese that landed on the burger. The burger remains hot. Not that the cheese becomes hot, but that the burger remains hot. And as long as the burger remains hot, it's going to be able to affect all of the cheese. And the nafkamina is if they're side by side. Right? They're side by side. So the ila'ah is not, nothing is cooling down the hot one, right? The cold one is not cooling down the hot one, but neither is the hot one heating up the cold one. They're side by side. So if you learn like the first way that the only reason, the only way time transfers is when they're both hot, so they're side by side, they're not going to both be hot. Only one of them is going to be hot. Only when it's one on top of the other do we assume tassal gavar and they both become hot, that the burger heats up the cheese. But when they're side by side, the burger will stay hot, the cheese will stay cold, and therefore time won't transfer fully. But if you assume like the second way of learning, that only one of them needs to remain hot, it just can't be cooled down. So the burger will remain hot, and therefore it will still be able to impact the cheese. That is how Rav Soloveitchik understands the machlokas between the Ramah and the Marshal about the lumdus of Tassal Gavar. Now, the Gemara then quotes a brisa. That if the top one is hot, so tassal gavar, and therefore you don't need to, the whole thing does not become treif, just rinse it off. Keep it the chamua, the maker, the yev shalabal porta, klipa miya mi bai. So the Gemara says, wait a second, just rinse it off. It took a second till the bottom thing cooled off the hot piece of meat, till the bottom item cooled off the top item. It must have penetrated at least the klipa. So, okay, Enochinami, you have to say that when the hot falls onto cold, so kolif, you do need a klipa. Sonin, letzok sonin, medea. And when it's sonin, letzok sonin, then you only need to rinse it off. So, because it takes some time for the bottom cold food to cool the top hot food. And in the meantime, the bottom cold food and the top hot food are balea, an amount that's kadei klipa. Right, a small amount of flavor. So you need to peel off a thin layer from both. So like I have a hot piece of meat falls on a cold block of cheese. Both the meat and the cheese require kadei klipa, just to peel off a thin layer. There are a lot of exceptions to this din, which we'll learn about, if not today, then Wednesday. The Taz quotes two reasons I mentioned before. Taz and Sifkan Bach quotes two reasons for the need for klipa, I didn't mention this part, but for the need for klipa, which the Gemara says, at the maker lebala, that while it cools down, it's going to at least, in the meantime, it's balea. So Rashi explains that means kodem shi'instanein bala kolta, that before it cools down, it's balea a little bit. The Yisrael Vahata says, shemach bidala. It's not that before it cools down, it's balea a little bit. It's that the weight itself causes a treif. Even if it cools down immediately, if it cools down the second it hits, but the weight causes a certain transfer of time. Gravity of the higher thing landing on the lower thing causes a certain transference of time. That's how the Yisrael Vahata learns. Chavis Das has a very chashuva ha'ara over here. I mean, we're saying that if I have a hot piece of meat that lands on a block of cheese, of cold cheese, so what happens? What happens? What do we say? What's our lachan? Hot piece of meat lands on a cold block of cheese. This is the ABCs, right? If you want to say dalu, yeah? What happens? Cleep on both, right? Meaning, so that piece of meat is what happens to the piece of meat? You need to do klipa. Why only klipa? Why not, why doesn't the whole thing become trade? Because tasa gavar, and therefore the piece of meat is cold, right? Meaning it started as a hot piece of meat, landed on a cold piece of cheese. So says the Chavis Das, what if you're making a cheeseburger, you're working at McDonald's, McDonald's gave a bunch of free cheeseburgers to Israeli troops, and now all the Muslims want to, boycott McDonald's. Whatever. Okay, so you have you're working out of McDonald's. You put a piece of cheese. You take a bun, a piece of cheese. I don't know how if there's that the way they actually do it, double knife or whatever. So you put a piece of cheese on the bun. Then you take a piece of cold cheese on the bun. Take a hot burger, throw it on the cold cheese. Right. So now at this point, klipa. Right. And the burger is considered cold. Right. Because that's how it. Then you take another piece of cheese, slap it on top of the burger a second later. Is that piece of cheese also underneath kedei klipa? Because the meat has been declared cold. Right? The hot piece of meat landed on cheese. And once it lands on cheese, tasal gavar, so the cheese cools off the hot piece of meat. So now you're going to say the top piece of cheese is also, it's cold and cold now? And there's no blios whatsoever? Hadacha, good enough? So Chavis Das is ridiculous. It's melting all over the place. There's steam coming up. It's melting. You can't say such a thing. That's absurd. Right? So the Chavis Das says, when we say tasal gavar, ilah gavar, it's only talking about the relationship between those two items. As far as the relationship between those two items are concerned, that's where tasal gavar, ilah gavar. This is an important ha'ara that the Chavis Das, I don't think anyone argues with that. Meaning, it's like one of these ha'aras that, like, you just maybe wouldn't have thought of, but it's very mistaver, and I don't think anyone argues with it. Another ha'ara that I don't know if I would have thought of, but I don't think anyone argues, is the Taz over here in Sifkat Nehei. The Taz in Sifkat Nehei says that tasal gavar is only when it's isur machmas atzma. But when the thing on the bottom only has a blia of isur, meaning, what was tasal gavar? That I have a hot piece of potato kugel lands on a cold piece of chazit. Or that's ilah gavar, right? Or I have a cold piece of potato kugel lands on a hot piece of chazit. Right, so then I assume tasal gavar and the whole potato kugel has tam of chazer in it. What if I had a piece of kosher meat that had blios of chazer in it, that was cooked together in the same pot with chazer, so there are blios of chazer in it. Now I take this kosher meat that has blios of chazer in it, and a cold piece of potato kugel lands on that hot piece of meat that has blios of chazer in it. Says the Taz, we do not say tasal gavar. Ein blia yotze mechaticha lechaticha belo rota. Blios don't go from chaticha lechaticha without a rotav, without some juice or sauce allowing for the transference of tav. Now that, he says it like it rolls off the tongue, like everyone knows that, but everyone knows it because he changed one word. Ein blia yotze mikli lekli belo rota. That's the real cloud. Right, the real rule that everyone always agrees with and that we always use in Yoredeya is that you can't have a blia go out of one pot and into another pot without a liquid medium in between them. So if you have a trefa countertop and you take a boiling hot pot of something, a clean boiling hot pot, even though it's full of challen, but on the bottom of the pot it's clean, there's nothing there, and you put it on the trefa countertop, nothing, it's fine. You put it directly on top of a trefa, a hot pot, it's fine. Because there's nothing in between them, it's just kli to kli. So that's what we say, that blios don't transfer below rota, from one kli to another kli. The Taz, like, you know, he snuck it past us, that a blio does not go mechaticha lechaticha below rota. That if the first chaticha is only also because of a blio in it, not because of it, but because of a blio in it, then it's not going to transfer without rota. So that's the kula of the Taz. I don't know. I didn't see anyone that argues. So it's worth discussing. Okay, so we didn't get as far as I thought we would. I wanted to finish the thought. So we still have to do, we should end, right? So I still wanted to do Bezer Shem for Wednesday. Ooh, tomorrow, Rabbi Sevelovsky, assuming he confirms, 12 o'clock Q&A with Rabbi Sevelovsky for a half hour. We need to collect questions. So I would suggest we discuss the Shach and the, I'm just seeing if he confirmed. I'll let you know when he confirms. But the shot from yesterday with Arai and I'm assuming we're going to want to talk about what's a hard cheese but put together part of anything that we left as a subject or a machlokes haposkim, we're going to want to hear what Rabbi Sevelovsky's machria. So if you could just put in the chat or send even all of these shilas, he answers them quickly. So if we only put together five shilas, it will be 3 minutes and it'll be over. So we need to get a lot of shadows together to make him feel that it's not a waste of his time. So let's try to do that. But on Wednesday when we have Shir again, so we'll discuss repeated Ivoi. When you keep on pouring more and more and more, we'll talk about a hot solid onto a cold liquid because it doesn't land on top; it lands in. So at what point do you say the tasa now becomes the la'a because it now right? And we'll discuss other things. What happens if you forget to do klipa? Okay, so Bezer Shem, all of that is for Wednesday.
Ethan, how many questions do you have?